Welcome, everybody. It's the 263rd edition of Europe Calling. I'd particularly like to welcome our guests joining us today from the United States and Germany, and everybody else, of course, not excluding anybody here. Happy to have you. My name is Maximilian Fries. I'm the Managing Director of Europe Calling. I'll be hosting this evening's program. So today it's all about natural gas. When a few weeks ago, Andy Georgiou got in touch and he asked if we should do something together on a company called Wenze Global. I was initially a little bit of a loss. Then I remembered what it is about and he explained it to me and it all changed that. So today we're hosting this exciting webinar together, which will delve deeply into US-European gas trading. Really looking forward to learning a great deal. Thank you, Andy. Great cooperation. Yeah, you never stop learning, even as a facilitator. Now, before we start, a few housekeeping announcements. We're speaking a mix of German and English. You need help, don't hesitate to use our two wonderful interpreters. You can select the language under the small globe icon in the control bar.
German and English today in a wild mix. If you need help with that, you can choose the interpretation function in the control panel on mobile devices. It's often found under more or three dots, and there you can choose the language you want to listen to and also mute the original sound if you choose to.
Welcome back to German. As always, with Europe Calling webinars, you can ask your questions and rate those asked by others. Today we're using Slido for this. You see the link in the chat. And so please feel free to ask your question there and rate those asked by others. This is the only way we can ask the questions that interest you, that you find exciting. We have over 1,000 registrations after all. Thanks very much to my colleague Amelie, who's helping with the questions behind the scenes today. Thank you, Amelie. So as always, Europe Calling will be recorded and then posted online on YouTube and as a podcast. So please bear this in mind when asking questions. So that's all for the housekeeping announcement.
So first, welcome as our first guest, Justin Mikulka, who is an investigative journalist and head of communications at the US non-governmental organization Oilfield Witness. And regular listeners to Europe Calling will already be familiar with Justin, because last year we hosted a fascinating webinar on methane emissions from oil and gas production in the US. And he knows the ins and outs of the key players in the sector, including Wenze Global. And that's why we are really, really looking forward to your talk opening this webinar on that topic. Justin, great to have you, and you have the floor.
Hi, thanks for having me. Have I shared? See if I can share my desktop. Oh, this one should do it. Just a second. I'm going to be talking today about the finances of Wenze Global and the LNG. But I think, as Maximilian mentioned, my organization does a lot of work on methane emissions and climate change. And we've looked at the LNG exports of the US more than most organizations. And as we are seeing record heat hit Europe and India and lots of places in the world right now, I think it's critical to keep in mind that LNG is liquefied methane. And the science is very clear that the most important thing we can do to address rapid warming is to reduce methane emissions from oil and gas. A lot of them are coming from LNG. But today I want to talk about energy security and finances and the relationship between Wenze Global and the Trump administration. So this morning there was a headline that says European gas rises on US-Iran uncertainties, LNG disruptions. So I think we're all learning about the energy security issues when you are importing your LNG for your country. So this is just an ongoing issue, but a reality of if you are going to rely on imported LNG, these types of disruptions are going to be part of that. This quote is from the CEO of Total. Total is a multinational oil and gas company based in the EU. Here he was talking in an article about Wenze Global and the finances of Wenze Global, and saying to a colleague, "What is the trick?" because Venture Global is selling their LNG more cheaply than other companies, which is one of the reasons why they're moving lots of volumes. But I think as we move through this whole discussion today, I think it's good to remember that phrase. Like, what is the trick? Like, what is actually going on here? Why is this company being successful, and what does the future look like? So the in 2024 or 2023, I guess, when Trump was running for re-election, he called a meeting and got the heads of the major oil and gas companies in the U.S. together, and he told them that if they gave him $1 billion, he would basically get rid of all the environmental regulations that they didn't like, and also actively work against the adoption of renewable energy. And unfortunately, that was a good deal for them. And since they, despite always talking about US energy being clean, their ideal scenario is not having any regulations. And so they handed over the money, and Trump got elected, and the regulations are gone. But Venture was at that meeting. In that article about that meeting, the first CEO mentioned was Mike Sabel. So we're dealing with a company here who one of their main competitive advantages is they have a direct line to the Trump White House. When we think about, again, thinking about climate change, the last thing we should be doing is loosening the regulations on the fossil fuel industry. But there was another meeting after Trump was re-elected, and the two founders of Venture Global had another meeting in the White House, and this was where. But what happened after that meeting was they bought more of their own stock. Now, traditionally in financial circles, if you meet with the top regulator and then leave that meeting and buy a lot of your own stock before the public is aware of the results of the meeting, that's called insider trading. And that is what one U.S. senator had asked about. Well, this looks like a lot like insider trading. So I think this is another example of where they're directly tied to the White House. And I would suggest if you're unsure of, like, the Trump administration has not only gotten rid of the environmental regulations around methane and around pretty much every toxin that comes out of industry in the U.S., but insider trading used to be illegal in this country. But if you just in your spare time, if you do a web search for insider trading Donald Trump, you will get a lot of information to show that basically the president is also profiting from insider trading. So we're in an environment where people like this, who are close with the president, have a distinct advantage, are not being held accountable for things that we used to consider crimes. Venture Global is also. This is an interesting situation. They're in legal battles with their own customers. So the way LNG contracts typically work is they were signed for about 20 years. And so Venture Global had contracts for its new facility in Louisiana, CP1. And that was coming online and becoming operational right when the Ukraine war started. And so, as I'm sure you're aware of, in the EU, gas prices skyrocketed then. And everyone was scrambling for gas because of the issues with Russian gas supply. And so the price of LNG on the spot market, if you just wanted to go out and buy it, tripled, or it went up in a huge amount. And so what Venture Global did during this time, they had contracts to start delivering LNG to their customers at an agreed upon price, which was much lower than the market rate price at that time. And so they told their customers, we're not really operational, we're not going to honor our contract. And they sold billions of dollars of LNG at much higher prices and made a lot of money. But BP and other large companies brought it to arbitration and said, we had contracts, you didn't honor the contracts. And BP so far has gotten $1 billion back. But again, this is a when you think about a long-term business model, if a company is not honoring contracts with its own customers, it's a unique, I think, situation in business. Reuters reported around, at the time that we were learning about this arbitration, that this was one of the biggest disputes in the industry's history. And the combined claims against Venture Global were $5.5 billion, which is a significant amount of money for that company's finances. And so, when I was putting together these slides, I was doing some searches for some news articles, and I thought this was an interesting combination because what Venture Global was doing, while they were making money selling it to Ukraine, they were still a private company, but then they went public through an IPO in early 2025. The hype for this IPO was incredible. It was done by the leading bank, Goldman Sachs. They were talking about this being the biggest energy IPO ever. There were comments about how it would be valued more than BP. So this one company selling LNG in the US was going to be bigger than BP financially. As you can see from the search result that came right below that, it was a big flop. And by March, they had wiped out $39 billion of the value after the IPO. So the investors who bought into this IPO and bought into the hype lost a lot of money. And so here you can see it's a stock chart where at the IPO it was around $25, and these days we're around $13. I will point out that if you look at this in this March-April timeframe, where we are still significantly at a lower price, one of the executives at Venture Global, it was reported recently, sold. He had 2 million shares in the company. He sold them all. And he made about $20 million. But when your executives are cashing out, when you're this new into a company, when they're benefiting from the current financial environment, that person should know better than anyone what the future of Venture Global looks like. And they took their money, they cashed out. So I think that that's another sign of what is the trick here? What's going on? I think there are a lot of financial questions that need to be answered. All of that said, the two guys who are having those meetings in the White House both are worth probably around $10 billion today. They were worth $24 billion until the stock price crashed. That is paper money, right? They haven't cashed all of that in. But an executive in this business is going to get rich, even when the people who invested in their company in the IPO lost half their money. So it's a very good gig to be a LNG CEO, but it's not good financially for many other people. An important thing about venture going forward is they have a lot of debt. This is a company that's been borrowing lots of money to build these export facilities. And when you look at companies, typically you would not want your debt to be a greater amount than the total market value of your company. That's a warning sign. And that's exactly where Venture Global is right now. And they're continuing to borrow more money. So there are real questions. Venture Global has made a lot of money in that instance during the Ukraine war when prices spiked and they were able to sell at those high prices. But in the regular markets and what's the coming glut of LNG that we still expect through year 2030, there's going to be a lot of LNG available. It'll be harder to make money and to pay back that debt. So there are real questions about that. When you have a large public company like this, you get a credit rating from these credit agencies. In October, one of those agencies downgraded Venture to negative. And one of the main points was they have a lot of debt and there are questions. Will they be able to pay it back? This quote is from I've never seen something like this before in an annual report, but this is from Venture Global's annual report where they're warning investors, if you invest in our company, and all companies do this, they list all the things that could go wrong. But this one is our indebtedness levels and the fact that we may be able to incur substantially more indebtedness, which may increase the risk created by our substantial indebtedness. That's someone telling you they have a lot of debt and there's a real risk they may not be able to pay it back. And so I think that the financial position of this company, as you know, for all of the reasons I've just mentioned, there are real questions about it. And so if the EU is looking to contract more with this company or build stronger partnerships with it, there certainly are a lot of reasons to second guess that, and just the future financial health of this company. And I think one of the best indications of that is the stock price is going down right now, even though gas prices around the world are high. So when it looks like investors are looking at the future and saying, all right, it's Venture Global's best days are behind it. And so I mentioned at the beginning of this talk that we really need to get off LNG because it's liquid methane and all of the emissions that are helping drive rapid climate change that more and more people realize is becoming a serious issue. But a very simple reason why Europe should be getting off of LNG is economics. We know how prices went up when Ukraine invasion happened. We know how prices went up with the Iran war. But we can see within the EU, Italy is highly dependent on gas. And I saw something, the numbers are changing, but Italians are paying many multiples of what people in Spain are paying for electricity. And it's a very simple reason. Imported gas is very expensive. It just went up another 50% since this war. And countries that are investing in renewables and battery storage are paying less. And that's not going to change. So as renewable prices come down and battery prices come down, gas prices are continued going up and are very volatile. I mean, a very simple reason for energy security, but for economic security, the idea that the EU would be embracing LNG at this point instead of running away from it as quickly as it could, it's a poor economic choice. It's a horrendous climate choice. And then there's just the energy security issues and the volatility. And it's tough to run your industries on an input cost like LNG when it moves up and down so much. And that's been a problem for European industry. So I think I'm looking forward. James is going to talk a lot more about the impacts of Venture Global in the US, but I think for now, that's the economic picture, which I think is troubling. And I think at some point, more people will understand the answer to the question, what is the trick here? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Justin. And you already gave a perfect transition to James. I just want to say it's like, because we didn't say it explicitly at the beginning, but Venture Global, as I understood it correctly, and maybe Justin, you can just give in the beginning the little window here, is the biggest, if not one of the biggest, suppliers of LNG to the European market. So that's why it's important that the company is so unstable. So it's just a huge chunk of the LNG market is dominated by this company. And why this domination and this company is also specifically problematic, we will hear from James Hyatt. He's from a better from For a Better Bayou. That's the right title. He's the founder of it. It's a movement, a local action movement in Louisiana. And James is an expert in climate resilience, and he specializes in coastal science, flood resilience, and community engagement. Lives in Lake Charles, Louisiana, says the internet. And he will report on the impact of gas export terminals and all the things Venture Global is doing in his state, and I guess beyond, depending on how you watch the sea. James, the Gulf of America, right? That now that we
yeah,
have
Gulf
to
of
say.
Mexico. We will call it Gulf of Mexico here in this presentation. Thank you so much. You cannot believe everything that's on the internet. My name is James Hyatt. I'm a former oil and gas worker. We used to work in a refinery, and we're here in Southwest Louisiana, which is on the Texas border, is where Lake Charles is. Let's see. And I just wanted to start off by saying, it's more than just the economics what we're talking about. These companies use people's lives and livelihoods as externalities, as things that do not fall into their accounting sheets. The public health impacts, the premature death and suffering is always accompanying this dependency on fossil fuels. From the moment it is extracted and fracked in West Texas along the compressor stations to the export facilities, there is suffering in communities that does not show up on these balance sheets but shows up in people's lives. This is an aerial view of Calcasieu Pass, Venture Global's Calcasieu Pass. And you can see it is directly on the Calcasieu River at the Gulf of Mexico. I wanted to bring in a bit of climate. We are very familiar with hurricanes in South Louisiana. This is the number of storms just from 2005. People are familiar with Katrina, which just devastated New Orleans. But we had on the same year, 2005, we had Hurricane Rita, which destroyed much of Cameron Parish in southwest Louisiana, followed by Ike and Gustav and Barry and Delta and Zeta and Ida and Laura. I can keep naming the storms that are coming because of our collective dependency on fossil fuels and adding more and more greenhouse gases into the atmosphere, which drive the climate chaos that we are seeing and are experiencing. And at the same time, we are watching companies like Venture Global. This is an aerial view of a satellite shot of the town of Cameron in Cameron Parish. You can see the already built Calcasieu Pass here. This is the one that they sold. They sold their cargoes for 3 years on a spot market and made record profits while not honoring their contracts. But we have to understand they're building these in places where people have lived. Not only here in southwest Louisiana, they are doing this in Texas as well, in Corpus Christi. They're trying to build some in Brownsville, in Freeport, in Port Arthur, and south of New Orleans, in Plaquemines. They have built the Plaquemines LNG facility, Venture Global has. This is a shot, a satellite shot from just a few weeks ago on May 12th. You can see the sprawling, the already existing Calcasieu Pass, which is operating, and this entire CP2. This is their newest build that's going on. And if you take a note, you can see these are people's houses. This is where people have lived for generations all along here within half a mile of this facility. There are people who are still living there and are having to put up with the crazy construction and traffic while this is going on. But this footprint right at the mouth of a river, right where hurricanes literally came in 2020, two hurricanes 6 weeks apart, devastated this entire area. And we're building the one of the causes of this climate chaos right in the path of the storm. And besides the ongoing climate, we also see sea level rise. This is the mouth of that river, and you can watch that beach erode from the very bottom of the screen as it moves all the way up. We are losing land in Louisiana. A football field every 90 minutes is what they say. This is not sustainable, what we're doing, and we are all complicit, especially if we switch our dependencies from Russian gas to European gas. If we change one fossil fuel flavor from coal to gas, we are still doing the same thing. We are still extracting carbon from underground and adding it to the atmosphere that is driving a planet that will be uninhabitable and unlivable. I want to speak a little bit about the other plants that are proposed and being built in southwest Louisiana. This one has a few old names. The Driftwood LNG had been bought out by an Australian company. The names have changed, but the fact and the impact to the community remains the same. We are seeing that a few small companies and a few small people are making profits hand over fist while they're inducing suffering, not only to the local livelihoods of fishermen and oystermen, and causing public health concerns such as headaches and nosebleeds and asthma, premature death and suffering, miscarriages go up whenever there is fossil fuel infrastructure nearby where people are living. One fact that we found in the compendium of LNG and fracking is that children who grow up near frack sites, which is where this gas comes from, are 2 to 3 times more likely to have leukemia. Children having leukemia because of our dependency on fossil fuels. We should get off of this stuff as quickly as we can, not just because we care about the people who are living alongside this, but because it's coming for us, because the climate chaos is coming for all of us. This was a church built in Cameron Parish. It is the Star of the Sea. This is the only, the church was destroyed in the hurricanes in 2020. But this monument is still there. It says, "Do not harm my children." She's pointing at the mouth of the river. She is talking about hurricanes because in 1959 and 63, we had hurricanes, but it wasn't for 60 years that we began having the string of hurricanes that started since 2005 in this area. I think she's not only pointing to the mouth of the river to say do not harm my children, the storms, but also each other, the humans. Do not build something that causes such suffering in this place. This is a mural that is on the shrimp house in Cameron Parish, where 2510 was the population in early 1980s. They were the largest shrimp house, the largest seafood producer in the United States. But now that has been replaced by these LNG facilities. We live on a river that is not like the Mississippi. We are not a mile wide. We are about 1,400 feet, 1,000 meters wide. This cannot really move more than one ship at a time in one direction. There's not enough room in this place. And on top of that, the creatures in the sea, the life that moves in and out of these estuaries are dependent upon this pathway to the Gulf of Mexico. This was a ship. Our friend John Allaire took this picture back in 2023. What a moronic, oxymoronic thing to call an LNG tanker clean energy. There's nothing clean about extracted carbon that is being frozen and piped and shipped across the ocean. It is the extraction and the combustion of fossil fuels is driving the climate chaos that we see. I wanted to show you this too. This state, Louisiana, should be one of the richest states in the country, but we have unfortunately bent over backwards for corporations time and time again for decades, to the point that Louisiana has the highest poverty rate in the wealthiest country that has ever existed. We are the poorest state in this country, and we are promised prosperity time and time again, whether it's offshore oil or gas. None of this comes to fruition. There are not enough jobs to support these people. The lies of the industry continue to come out, and our politicians continually bend over backwards. That is, you may know him as the special envoy to Greenland, but he is the governor of Louisiana, who is in the pockets of these corporations who only seek to extract and maximize their profit margins. I don't know how much time I have. I'm probably running way over, but I wanted to point out to these people who are being affected. This was taken early last year. In 2025, I went out oystering with these folks who live off of the water. There's an oyster season, a shrimp season, crabs. All of this is abundant in this place. We live in a sportsman's paradise. The ecology here allows for quite a lot of biodiversity and supports massive amounts of seafood. Unfortunately, the continued extraction and exploitation of these companies have caused great harm. This picture has about 30 oystermen. These ships that come through on this small river send huge wakes and waves that have flooded boats. I invite you to visit gulfrising.com if you want to listen to a firsthand experience of an oysterman who had his boat sunk by an LNG tanker. And this is what prosperity looks like. In the foreground, you see a business, a building that has been destroyed by the hurricanes and not fixed. Meanwhile, here comes the Moran Gas Andrus, which is transporting gas, the LNG, from Cameron LNG, another export facility just a little bit up the river, that went to Europe. This gas went to Europe. Meanwhile, the people in Cameron are still suffering. In August of last year, Venture Global, in their rush to hurry up and build their facility, spilled mud directly outside of these containment areas. It's hard to see in this picture, but they were supposed to be building marsh. Instead, mud spilled out this causeway, this conveyance channel into this river. This is the lake. This is where the oystermen have farmed oysters on top of the water. They're floating. All of this mud, smothered oysters, completely destroyed the oyster season this year, where they should have been able to oyster for 180 days from September till April. They had 18 days of oystering, and 11.5 million farmed oysters were destroyed because this mud got out and caused conditions that wrecked the oysters. These were floating on top in cages. They should not have any mud on them, and pockets of mud were found in the shells, and they're unmarketable, unedible. People cannot eat these. On top of that harm, this is a pipeline for Delfin LNG, which is an offshore LNG that exploded in February 3rd of this year, just a few months ago. This is a Jeep that is inside that hole where the massive explosion happened. All of this is a mad rush to get gas frack gas out to markets. So the demand is real. And so that's part of why I'm here. We are here because it is a supply issue, but it's also a demand issue. And we have got to get off of this addiction to fossil fuels. Our home is not a sacrifice coast. This is fishermen and oystermen who joined me outside of an LNG conference that happened in October of last year to say that to think that the wealthiest country that has ever existed could actually regulate and enforce the laws that are on the books requires them to not be in the pockets and not be held hostage by lobbyists and corporate interests and to actually put the people's interests ahead of everything. I'll stop there. My name is James Hyatt, and feel free to follow us on Instagram or TikTok or YouTube or whatever at Better Bayou. And thank you so much for coming this evening.
Thank you, James. This was so immensely powerful. Thank you so much. Really, really strong. And I think this really shows another light besides the economics, what it actually causes for the people on the ground in the community. So thank you so much. And thank you for your work and everyone who's involved in the community and doing the actions. So I'm going to switch to German.
Right. Let's continue with Julian Schwarzkopf. Because what we saw now was the US side of things. Let's look at the European side. So Julian Schwarzkopf is team leader for the gas phase out at Deutsche Umwelthilfe, a major environmental and climate organization in Germany, known also to take legal actions, for example, against Venture Global. And they are very experienced, they're very knowledgeable. So I'm excited to hear what Julian has to say from the European side. And in general, how to deal with Venture Global and the European gas market in general. Julie, off you go. Nice to
thank you. And thank you also to James and Justin. I hope you can all see my slides. Well, so today I'm going to talk about Venture Global from the European point of view. And my title is Germany's most problematic energy supplier. So just in order to give you a bit of a framework, let's look at gas imports to Germany and their development over time. So Venture Global didn't used to be a gas supplier to Germany. They only came on the scene a few years ago. So 2022, there was this huge shift from Russian gas to gas from elsewhere after the Russian war of aggression against Ukraine. So for the first time, we had these floating LNG terminals and more supplies via Belgium and the Netherlands as well, partially also LNG. So it's delivered to Belgium or the Netherlands and then delivered by pipeline to Germany. And then also 2020, a slew of new delivery contracts, supply contracts for LNG were concluded. We're going to see that here. So you can see it's a lot, especially when you look at 2024. Remember this last slide, and now we can see that it's going to even increase, because German importers have contracted to buy all of this, and most of it comes from the US, so more than 90%. And in the next few years, Germany is going to try to get energy from other countries as well, but the US is going to be the biggest supplier, going to remain the biggest supplier. And if you look at the companies from the US, Venture Global has the largest share, selling the biggest volumes to Germany. So 5 million tons per year, that's what they're going to sell to Germany when the supply contracts actually start. So you can see this green at the bottom. So all of this is supposed to be Venture Global. And we have ENBW and another major company, Germany. They have concluded these supply contracts. And if you look at the totals, the result is 442 billion cubic meters LNG. And just for comparison, our annual gas consumption is about 80 billion cubic meter and decreasing. a lot lower than, for instance, in 2020, because we now have this energy crisis with Iran, and that's another reason to decrease gas consumption. And sometimes we believe it feels like our government is forgetting about climate goals, but we still have them. So if we look at the supply contracts with Venture Global, then what you can see is that it's mostly SEFE, used to be Gazprom, so it's a state-owned company, and then ENBW, owned by Baden-Württemberg, the federal state. So then, so they're really a publicly owned company. That means that any problems with the supplies is going to be a burden for the taxpayers. And then look at the supply terms, the terms of the contracts. You can see that some of them are supposed to expire only in 2046. There's a new contract with Glenfarm, even up until 2049. The Venture Global contracts are supposed to expire only in 2046, so that's beyond our climate goal year, 2045. And especially the fact that these companies are public and have contracts with this very problematic US company, that's not great. Because we have public climate goals, and such companies, state-owned companies, are supposed to keep that into account, keep those goals into account, but they don't seem to do that. So overall, let's look at these are EU figures, EU total figures, but it's very similar for Germany. So it means that we have a massive oversupply of LNG. That's going to happen. Justin has said it. It's going to be a buyer's market. We're going to have a lot more gas than we can even consume, looking at our climate goals. So if we look at these supply contracts and the pipeline deliveries that we already have and our own production in the EU, and then look at the EU Commission climate goal path, that's the yellow line here. And this is a conservative scenario. But even here, we can see that we have a lot. Even now, we have more gas than we need. We're not going to need all the supply contracts. So what's going to happen? Are we just going to get rid of our climate goals? Are we going to re-export the gas on a buyer's market? That's going to be difficult, and we're not going to get a lot of money for it. So it is a problem because, again, taxpayers are going to foot the bill. And the result is a lock-in effect even now because, of course, we're starting to build infrastructure on the basis of these long-term contracts. So these are the plans for Germany. On the left-hand side, we can see the fossil gas demand for 2030. According to the German government. And on the right-hand side, we can see the import capacity for LNG. So we have the six floating terminals we already have. There's another six fixed terminals planned in Brunsbüttel, Stade, etc. So in comparison with the conservative projection of prognosis by the German government, we have massive overcapacity. So chartering of floating terminals or securing the terminal in Brunsbüttel, there are state aids for this. So we have environmental effects on the spot, noise, air pollution, noise pollution, water pollution, environmental nature protection zones around the terminal in Wilhelmshaven is supposed to be built in a nature protection area. So, but apart from that, it's also a massive risk of having stranded assets at the end of all this. And then on the other side of the Atlantic, so on the US side, it's similar. They're building as well. They already have massive export capacities, but they're supposed to be expanded. So you can see But it's a lot more. This is about a lot more than just replacing Russian LNG deliveries. The US government has massive, major plans to export more oil, more gas, more LNG, ship more, basically. And that's one of the reasons why the US is really putting a lot of pressure on the EU to keep concluding contracts for more and more. So we have this unholy promise that the EU has made the US $750 billion in addition for energy in order to buy energy from the US. And the speaker accidentally said crime instead of promise and then said, well, it was probably a Freudian mistake. So we have the German bank, Deutsche Bank, and other major financial institutes. You can see on the right-hand side the ones supporting Venture Global. So I don't really have time to tell you all about it, but you can read it for yourselves. So a lot of German money is being invested in this very harmful infrastructure on both sides of the Atlantic, sabotaging our climate goals. So why is it such a problem? James already mentioned the local effects, the climate effects, the environmental effects of gas production in the US and the export terminals. And I would like to add some points on the climate footprint of US LNG, because if you look at it, US LNG is even more harmful to the climate than LNG from other suppliers. Because what you can see here below the line is the CO2 that is created when gas is burned. So per billion cubic meter natural gas in this case. So that's what's being reported in the German greenhouse gas inventory. But that's not the whole story, because you also have to look at the entire chain. So CO2 emissions that result from the fracking itself, from transport, logistics, that's a very energy intense process, but also the methane emissions, direct gas being directly leaked into the atmosphere, where it's 80 times more harmful to the climate than CO2 generated by burning the gas. So the US is doing a lot worse here. So the climate damage generated when they supply gas is a lot higher than from other suppliers. So we used conservative figures by the International Energy Agency, the IEA, and we've compared it to estimates from environmental organizations on the right-hand side. So maybe the damage is going to be a lot higher than the conservative figure on the left-hand side. And then we've seen the effects in Texas and Louisiana, and even in the US itself, the environmental effect, but also the methane emissions and the climate, the harm to the climate is great. So this brings me to my last slide. What are we doing against this? The DUH, we're kind of known for submitting complaints. So in this case, for Venture Global, we have submitted a complaint under the Supply Chain Due Diligence Act, the short LKSG, because there's a lot of provisions for due diligence for companies. So they have to really check their entire delivery chain. And this is not about climate effects, but it's about human rights, labor rights, local effects, environmental effects, air pollution around the export terminals, water quality in the areas where fracking takes place, etc., local environmental effects, labor protection, because there have been, well, there are terrible working conditions when such terminals are built. So in February 2025, we've submitted an internal complaint to SEFE and ENBW, because you have to go to the companies themselves first. That's the rule. So we've done very detailed research, and we've submitted a 30-page complaint in order to document all of the infringements that we assumed or could even prove. And we didn't really expect them to act, and they didn't. So that was followed up by a formal complaint to the Federal Office for Economic Affairs and Export Control. They're responsible for actually enforcing the LKSG. And James has already also listed the kinds of complaints that are in this. So the demand was that SEFE and ENBW are supposed to address these complaints. And we've now heard that the processing time for our complaint is supposed to be another year. That's very long. They have to come up with remedies up to the termination of the contracts. But we believe that within this Office for Economic Affairs, I mean, they're a delegated body of the Ministry of Economics, and our Minister for Economics, Katharina Reichert, wants to promote LNG. So we believe that she's just short-staffed the BAFA, this office, so that they can't actually get through such complaints. So that's the state of affairs with our complaint. But some of you maybe have heard it from the media. We have lodged several different legal actions against German LNG terminals. Just to give you one example, for many, we've won a lot. So one of them that we won was an urgent procedure against destruction of the NITRA reserve in Wilhelmshaven. I mean, the main action hasn't been decided, but the company TESS wants to build one of Europe's largest LNG terminals in the middle of a nature reserve. And we at least managed to put a stop to these building works while the decision is being taken. Wilhelmshaven is one of the main terminals for Venture Global's gas to arrive in Germany. Thank you for your attention, and I'm looking forward to your question, and of course, before that, to Anka's presentation or statement. Thank you. That was very interesting. And we're getting more and more questions now. So we have a lot of material for our Q&A later. So you can ask your questions in Slido, you can vote on other people's questions, and then we're going to get to that after our next speaker, Anka Esser. She's a climate activist for the NGO network Gaswende, and she does a lot, among other things. She works on the Hammer Climate Camp, but Anka is going to explain that herself. Anka, you have the floor.
Yeah, right. Anka, thank you for having me. For 10 years now, I've been a climate activist, and I'm now working in a project, Gaswende Transition, to link the various communities. For more than 10 years now, we've had an anti-gas movement. And at the time, what we managed is a ban on fracking and also CCR, banned for a long time. And for quite a while, people knew very little about, you know, the issues with natural gas and what are the consequences, what's the impact on climate. This was underestimated. So in my contribution, let me explain where we are at the moment, what we know, what we do. So Julian told you what his organization, das die Actors of Ende Gelände and Umwelthilfe have worked on this issue on natural gas. At the beginning, it was very difficult because, you heard it, the war of aggression against Ukraine making things very difficult. And then in 2024, we learned that the international gas lobby in Berlin was going to have a mega party in a noble hotel in Berlin. So we were not quite happy with that. And various climate activists, various groups got together and setting up organizational days in the sense that, you know, a counter gas summit. We had workshops at seminars, also with Stefan Wenzel, the then Secretary of State, who was invited to the event, and a number of indigenous and international players, activists, James as well, and Andy, were available and held a workshop. So there was a major demonstration as well. This is our banner of James Group. He showed you on the slides. And Ende Gelände. I'm a great fan of having a great variety of actors coming in with different formats of taking action. We're at climate movements, and we felt it was really important to have this congress, this summit. You know, after the COVID pandemic, it felt like, let's start again, let's get going. Also the counter movement against the use of gas in Germany. And the gas lobby, they certainly saw what was happening outside. Ende Gelände and Next Generation have added their part to just annoy them a bit. So phasing out natural gas and then really make fossil fuel companies accountable. So a lot has happened ever since 2024. It's a great start at the time. We have meetings to network. We have a strategic seminar, and together we reflect on what kind of action we can take together. But we're still actually, you know, building up our movement. Last year, however, we had a number of measures of action against drilling, especially in places where natural gas infrastructure is perhaps planned and LNG terminals to be built. And the drillings, of course, the drilling rigs. Of course, at local level, it's easier to get people up and about and into the streets. This happened in Borkum on the island in the North Sea, but also in Bavaria, in the southeast of Germany. And this is the story I brought along that just shows, you know, demonstrates that it makes sense that various actors join hands. There was a plan to start drilling in Bavaria, so Greenpeace and other, the anti-fracking movement and the Climate Alliance Against LNG got together. Ah, and then it was said, oh, the eco-terrorists are arriving. That's what the company said. And First Future just brought flowers and cake, you know, had a peaceful demonstration, convincing people on the ground. So a citizens' initiative, a grassroots organization started in the community. So we got more people on board, people decidedly saying we do not want to produce gas here. And Ende Gelände, which is our group, linked with our group as well, we were not in the news in terms of these are really bad climate activists, etc. So it's a very nice way of working together, violence-free. So what next? Well, at our seminar, we reflected on what narrative we could use. So, of course, natural gas is expensive. It makes it dependable on Putin, on Trump, so that people actually know it by heart. You know, it's damaging the climate, dirty, and not just look at CO2 emissions, but everything around that as well. Also the high risk. We do talk about a high-risk technology. It's a dirty solution. We want clean, safe, and renewable energy. We want reliable, clean, and affordable energy, and also show other ways forward. There's another thing that we noticed. We actually don't know about plans to expand natural gas infrastructure like terminals. So a project was started together against gas, Gemeinsam gegen Gas. The link is here, but I can post that in the chat. Here's a map, and there's a site on the campaign together with the German Umwelthilfe, Klimabündnis gegen LNG. You'll find the framings, and there's also an online map that invites you to ask the state, so you can actually send an inquiry about what's happening where. Is there any infrastructure planned in your region, etc.? So to generate more knowledge, that was the idea behind it. And we wanted a map, a printed map, because this is what the past taught us. It makes sense. You know, people just, you know, it's very visible. They see what's happening at their local level. On the other hand, we also want this digital map to keep it updated. It's in German, but I think you could take a look anyhow. It's not complicated. And I have to add that we do not depict a complete picture of the German infrastructure on gas, but it's mainly the expansion of this infrastructure. It's also a symbol of the rush that you talked about, like the rush for gas also in Germany. This is why we're showing LNG terminals mainly. And we picked orange because it's a warning color. Warns you of danger. Most plants and terminals are in orange, and it's also a way to say, look, you can do something about it. People say, see that in their region a new terminal will be built in the future, so let's chat to my neighbors, see what can we do, and we can set up a new group. And something else the map demonstrated. It was an eye-opener, really, just like our action days against LNG, is that we want a moment of crystallization. We want a place to get together as well. So we were kind of reflecting, where could we meet? And we didn't think of the region here in North Rhine-Westphalia, but this map actually shows a lot of is happening here. It's a hotspot region, the former coal region, where the future LNG plants are built. And now a few words on the so-called action days. It's just like the LNG summit or against LNG summit. We will have a camp, workshops, networking meetings, panel discussions. So you're very welcome to join. You can see the date. It's a so-called Hammer Climate Camp, Hammer Klima Camp. It's a place called Hamm. That's what this is about. And Hammer, it's a hammer in German, but also means real cool, you know. Something is hammer, it's like real cool. So that's why we chose the name in a mix of the name of the town and being a cool camp. We have the necessary infrastructure, including a demonstration is planned, trying to set a world record. The largest living windmill is to be formed. This is an action by Ende Gelände. People are using their bodies to fight against climate change, against LNG. Ende Gelände is the group that ever since 2015 has carried out various actions. For example, people with in white coats went down into coal mines in protest, and they managed to build up pressure in a way that the phasing out from coal has come about in Germany. So what do we expect from the action days planned at the end of the month? Now, first of all, let me say that people at local level feel motivated. We activated them, and they are happy to roll up their sleeves and join hands and join the action. It's nice. And I also have to say that the area for the camp we actually camp on the former coal mine areas. And that shows we can win a fight, but we also do not want to repeat mistakes made in the past. And we don't, we want to discourage people from keeping to use fossil fuels. So the data centers, also planned in the region, are also an aspect needing energy and electricity. We had a lot of chats, discussions beforehand. So we're in a phase of building trust as a movement, or movements that weren't talking to each other very much before, which made us lose trust. We had anti-colonial groups. In Germany, for a long while, there was no discussion about natural gas. And finally, let me say, we're really exciting. We're happy to see what's going to happen, looking forward to those action days. And it's pretty clear to us that, yes, you know, it needs a lot of efforts for the phasing out. And I hope many of you are motivated to join hands with us. Thank you so much, Anka. It was exciting. That gave us some insight into the movement and the actions taken. I think you're starting tomorrow, right? It's day number one. So, yeah. So we have another half hour for questions. And I'll move on in English.
So doing this Q&A in English, and I want to actually go to the question in a bit, and actually now, and start connecting with what Anka said with what James said, right? So James, we saw the picture, you and the placard were in the demo on the protest here in Germany as well. So wondering is like, how is the situation for civil society, for you movement, for NGOs in the United States right now? So do you see, you know, are there protests? I heard from, you know, Virginia, for example, that protest against a data center, for example, led to completely that they basically voted out a whole council administration, right? So is there also a political movement that that starts to be, you know, a problem for state governments or council governments? And I just give you the question here as well. So you also see that I'm just not making this up. So Marcus says, follow the money. Are the senators and Congress members from Louisiana all corrupt and paid by these companies? What about the voters? So it's maybe connecting to that. So what is the situation of the resistance on the ground, and how is that connected with, you know, the political situation?
Yeah, well, I mean, we are undergoing all kinds of stuff in the moment. There's a massive redistricting effort to basically take some power from more left areas. Also going on right now is a massive recall effort in Louisiana to recall the governor, Governor Landry, who has been a very strong supporter of these LNGs and this carbon capture infrastructure that is being promoted here by the fossil fuel industry. There is power, I think, growing, and people are upset because unfortunately people sometimes don't get involved until it affects them, hit their wallet. And our exporting of gas, the data center demand for more gas infrastructure has caused the electricity prices in Louisiana to go up as well. And things are unaffordable. This war in Iran, this unjustifiable war in Iran, this situation has exposed the government as working for the few, the ultra wealthy, the uber wealthy, as opposed to working for the people. And that has brought people of very differing political ideologies together, because, you know, this government, we're about to celebrate 250 years of government by the people, for the people, we the people. And in fact, it's been run by corporations and moneyed interests to the detriment of people. And so we are aligned. I think the left and the right are aligned. We on the things. We want clean air. We want clean water. We want a future for our children. And we are tired of supporting multi-billion-dollar companies who do not look for the interests of the people and only look for their own their own pockets. Those four things we're aligned on. We get in the weeds when we start talking about culture war kind of things, but the things that actually matter to most people are not being enacted by the government, and it is building a resistance to it. As far as recall petitioning and we're in line with a lot of farther right folks against carbon capture, this false solution that will. Basically give more money to these fossil fuel companies to continue extracting and exploiting in the way that they have for decades. I hope that answered the question.
It did indeed. And yes, thank you. So maybe also pass it to Justin as well, because there's another question by Marcus, incidentally, just close together, and James already mentioned it. So Marcus asks again, so one of the reasons to start the war with Iran is to sell more US LNG gas with higher prices. So Trump is not interested to stop the war with Iran. As long as the Strait of Hormuz is closed, they can sell LNG at high prices. So the economics questions for you as well, Justin. So how do you view this?
In the short term, that makes sense, right? The LNG companies and the oil companies are profiting. But one of the things that's happening within the conversation of people who follow LNG and talk about it is that they expect that what's happened here, that so many countries are realizing they're reliant on this expensive imported fuel. And honestly, you're reliant on what Donald Trump decides to do given day to day, and it's not a very secure position. So the good news for the climate is that the general consensus within energy analyst community is that long term, this is going to be bad for LNG, because people are seeing that not only is it more expensive, people haven't, the global energy system is transitioning right now. And solar power is, for the first time in April, for the first time in history, the world produced more electricity with renewable power than it did with gas power. I mean, that happened just very recently. These are huge turning points in the global energy markets. And while short term, what Trump is doing is benefiting those people who he brought into the room and said, if you give me $1 billion, I'll do whatever you want. People are now realizing that China is importing less LNG. India was supposed to be a growth market. They're importing less LNG. And so I think that what Trump is doing and what he's done with this war and pushing fossil fuels on the world, it was an approach that even in 2022, fossil fuels were still the choice, the preferred choice. Now everyone is realizing they could use, in India, solar plus batteries is cheaper. And they don't have to rely on the import. So I think what's happening is and James talked about the unaffordability and the political resistance in the United States to data centers is all about electricity costs. And that if they power these data centers with gas power, it's going to raise the price for everyone in the US. And it's the first thing I've seen. I've been following US politics since George Bush was starting wars in Iraq. This is the first issue I've seen where people on the right and on the left are saying no to data centers, like they're united. And so I think it's a very interesting time where the fossil fuel industry is fighting really hard to control the markets and to keep market dominance. But the economics of clean energy are just beating them.
Yeah, thank you very much. Anka has a hand.
I think this question about data centers is really interesting. In the German climate action, that's certainly going to be a topic. About a month ago, we had a meeting. Network activists and climate activists met in order to talk about this topic. And on the oncoming climate camp, there will be various different workshops on that topic. And then, of course, the question is what is going to be the follow-up. During the climate camps in the summer, that's also going to be an important topic of discussion. But I think that we can really learn from what's happening in the US in terms of resistance. So maybe we can exchange on that if you will have some actions against it. And just in general, on the topics of renewables, we still have to talk about renewables as well. We've been saying for too long renewables are cheaper and the price is going to be decisive. But now we're at the point where the fossil lobby has people in governments. And so they make sure that their bodies are still safe. So in Germany, gas plants, power plants aren't really profitable either. It's the most expensive choice. But I think this is a question that we're thinking about a lot. As climate activists, we never really promoted an alternative technology. And maybe now we have to talk about solutions more and change our way of working a little bit. I'll give you an example. There's a project we're working on, and we're trying to work together with employees from the wind power sector, because our energy minister, with contacts to the gas lobby, is trying to block renewable energies. And unfortunately, there's very few people working for wind power at the moment because the employees are not organized in a trade union. So we're looking at helping them or getting organized with climate activists as well. So that's something we're working on. And so maybe the question back to the US, James, you've worked in the energy industry. Have you had similar connections maybe?
Very interesting. So I'm giving the question directly to James because now I know you're discussing among yourselves. I love that. So James, how's with the workforce in the fossil fuel industry? Do you see start to see cracks there?
Yeah, I mean the reality is that the there's not that many jobs anymore in oil and gas here. They do employ a lot of people. Most of my friends are working. My brother-in-law actually took a job with Venture Global. But the reality is, like, we have a future that part of it could be cleaning up the mess of the oil and gas industry. And so people who are in this, we have all these abandoned wells, but at the same time, we have the ability to upgrade our grid. Our grid is far behind, right? And so there's a lot of workforce development that could happen. And you're not going to have the AI out there stringing up the electricity poles and the infrastructure needed to do this transition. So that's the unfortunate part of deraveling this IRA that the Biden administration had done, is there was a lot of money to develop workforce and to give jobs to prepare us for a transition. And as far as the people do not love working for oil and gas as much as they love being able to pay their bills. And if we provided opportunity in other places where they could provide for their family, they would jump on that in a second. I think that
Thank
is the
you.
point. Yeah.
Yeah, great. Just want to plug in here a webinar we did for the Germans audience, actually, but I think YouTube can also easily translate this. So there was a study here done in Germany by the last government, and now the new government actually didn't want to publish it. They wanted to hide it a bit on basically the money regional communities and communities in a whole can actually earn from renewable energy. So because renewable energy is actually creating a lot of wealth and income for local communities. Right, so put that in the chat. It's in German, but it's nowadays with AI and data centers, you can all translate this. This is all coming full circle. So I want to go to James and to Julian, sorry. And Julian, you get the top two questions here. But I already know that you will answer them. I have also some thoughts on that as well, actually. So Ulrike asked, so can the LNG contracts be terminated before they normal expiry? Or will there be punitive payments there if for any lost profit or something like that? And then also the question that comes up a lot, actually, so where are those long-term contracts coming from? And many asking, are they coming from the last government where the Greens were involved as one of three partners? So maybe Julian, can you talk to us about what's with the contracts, how to get out of them, and how they came about? And then maybe we can also, after that, so gonna answer that, and then I want to open for the last 10, 15 minutes maybe, also the question of overcapacity, because this is obviously an also interesting political question. So Julian, maybe on the kind of contract side of things.
Yes, I'm happy to. So unfortunately, these contracts can't easily be canceled. They usually include take or pay clauses, which are exactly what they sound like. You either take the entire LNG volume or you pay anyway. How precisely the different contracts work isn't entirely clear because the contracts themselves aren't public. A cancellation is usually only possible in specific cases that would have to be mentioned in the contract. So force majeure, violation of the contract by one of the parties, or indeed changed laws, possibly. No, they can't be cancelled easily in the context of Venture Global. If the BAFA, the agency I mentioned before, finds that these contracts violate Germany's supply chain law, then potentially there could be a case. But no, in general, this is what the lock-in effect means. Where the German importers have entered into a contractual agreement to take these amounts of LNG, and then, if some of them go bust over this, the public ownership of some of these importers, public at either the level of the federal government or state or a federal state, so more local government, then this also has implications, obviously for taxpayers, and that's extremely concerning. They can, however, usually be renegotiated. So, if the German government makes a decision to basically influence the companies that it has shares in to do that, there is some leeway. Overall, this is precisely the lock-in effect that we see. Also, because these long-term contracts are then used to justify LNG infrastructure. Who did it? The second question, or which government rather? I actually happen to have the figures here because I had to look at this last week. So under the former government with the Greens, the Liberal Democrats, and the Social Democrats, about 360 billion cubic meters of LNG contract volumes were passed under this government. To some extent, the reaction at the time, I would say, is understandable. We did have an unprecedented crisis with Russia's invasion, and it was clearly necessary to shift some of the Russian or formerly Russian gas imports to other suppliers. The European Commission at the time did an assessment of how much LNG infrastructure Germany would need, and they recommended two or three floating temporary LNG terminals. The German government then at the time completely overreacted and passed an LNG acceleration law that included, I think, at the time, 13 LNG terminals, of which nine projects are still either already operating or in planning. So much more than would have been needed. The real scandal, maybe an additional scandal, I think, is happening under the current government, which is that this push for new LNG contracts is still ongoing. So under the new government, in its short time in office, we've had three new big LNG supply contracts totaling 83 billion cubic meters of LNG, on top of the 360 that we had previously, which then added together gives us this a figure of 442 billion cubic meters that I mentioned in my presentation. So it's both, but by now there's really no excuse for the current government to still be doing this.
Yeah, thank you. Very important. Actually, back in the day, 2013, when those contracts were negotiated, we had Robert Habeck, the energy minister in that time, in this webinar, in this very room here, with like nearly 10,000 people. Actually, we talked about this, and I still remember, like, there were two answers. Because we asked him, obviously, the same question, right? So why not only build three, but you build 13, or then maybe nine? And so why have that overcapacity? And there were two answers to it that he gave, and I wonder what you Julian and Andy and the others and Anka say about this. So one was, look, this was also the chancellery, so the head of government, pushing for this. So the Social Democrats historically are more, favorable of gas and fossil fuel stuff. And he said, so basically the chancellor was also very much much more cautious and wanted much more overcapacity. That was reason one. It was a bit deflecting on his part, but can still be true. And the other side, he said, is like, look, we are potentially in a war with Russia. Right, so they and the attacks on critical infrastructure, including pipelines, Nord Streams 2 was just bombed, I think, a couple of weeks before we had the webinar or something around that. So you need some overcapacity for resilience, because if Russia decides to bomb one or two pipelines or terminals, you still need to have enough left. So those are the two kind of arguments, the way which is more like it's a political argument. I think it's harder to judge. But the other one, in terms of resilience, also that if it comes to a situation, you don't want to just rely in your gas delivery just on a handful of terminals. So hands first, what do you think about that argument? And do you see that argument for having a bit of overcapacity? And how much would you say you need? It's always, we're asking the same questions every, how much overcapacity? So of course it's a very difficult question, but Julian.
To answer that. So on your first point, I would definitely say it's true. The Green Party, left to its own devices, certainly wouldn't have built up these overcapacities in terms of LNG infrastructure and also in terms of supply contracts. So yes, the Social Democrats as a coalition partner, and also the Liberal Democrats, who were obviously very concerned about Germany's economy and being able to continue to use fossil gas, they definitely share a lot of the blame here. However, Robert Habeck was also the responsible minister at the time, and he did, stand behind these plans and defend them publicly as well. So I would say, yes, I concede that is true. I certainly do not want to put the blame of all of this on the Green Party. Now, regarding the question of kind of a safety buffer, I think, yes, a certain safety buffer is certainly wise. But we also need a safety buffer for the climate. And what we haven't really talked about yet is that we can do a lot of things actually to push down gas consumption even farther, faster, sorry, faster. It's getting late than we are currently doing. So, almost all of the gas consumption that we have in Germany can already be replaced technologically. This will not always be economic. Also, the regulatory framework conditions for this are getting worse. But basically, for power generation, you have alternatives such as batteries plus renewables, which can do a lot of what new gas power plants are supposed to be doing for security of supply. For any heating that isn't really high temperature heating, you have heat pumps run with renewables that can replace gas both in homes and in industry. Yes, this isn't always easy, but still, right, there's a lot we can do to enlarging the safety buffer that we have, if we look at the total import capacity that we want to have, while also benefiting the climate. Now, how large a safety buffer do we need? I would say we certainly don't need to have twice the import capacity of what we are likely to be consuming in the 30s and 40s. That would be a bit like building an entire second heating system in your home because you're worried that one of them might break down. And that just isn't very very economic. A lot of this depends on subsidies as well, and we need to spend tax dollars wisely, because you can basically put them either into renewables as part of the solution, or you can say, we need a bit more security, we put it into gas, but then you make the problem worse.
Yeah, thank you. I have a hand from Anka, and then we're going to do a final round of questions, Anka.
Right, thank you. Just to add something on the climate activist, I don't think it makes sense to extend destructive for fossil fuels, for natural gas. So the main issue is not the fact that in Germany or the United States, people are in power who say, oh, so how much gas will we need? Let's go for as little as possible. But it's people who say we want to keep building our infrastructure on the existing one. And this is the approach that we criticize. The renewable energy is the most affordable. And in certain regions, looking at Ukraine, for example, to generate secure energy security, you just have to carefully look what's the consequences. We produce heat or electricity using natural gas, so what's the impact? Looking at myself and the population, and also what we heard from James and Justin, it doesn't make sense. It's unhealthy to keep importing these amounts, these volumes of natural gas. That's what we just heard. They're safe technologies that could be used as an alternative. So I think we really should demand that this infrastructure should not be based on fossil fuels and natural gas.
Actually, we have this discussion here. So I'm in Düsseldorf, which is like the capital of the biggest state in Germany, and we just about to pass like the central heating new central heating law, and basically by 2045 there will be no gas infrastructure in that city anymore. So it's done. So there is for industry, yes, there is some, and you know, some of it. So you know, so. Things are also moving kind of on the legislative side, even if you have a federal government that is going in the other direction. There are some positive lock-in effects as well. So that is there's also a good news, I think, also for the movement to say that. I think that's always important. And I probably should say that, you know, everything we are talking about, what Anka is doing, what James is doing, what Justin, what Julian, what Andy is doing, it's super important that when we look back in the 10th, right, in 2015, 2016, the situation where we are now in terms of energy transition, especially in Europe, but in Germany in particular, would have been unthinkable. And very much also the cost per unit for renewable energy. So there's an enormous transformation going on. And this is super important. This has been pushed by civil society on that side, on this side, and the other side of the Atlantic and all over the place, right? So we should never forget this, that even if, like, you know, the fights are getting harder, they are getting harder because, you know, it's the last bits now. It's so they're getting in trouble, and we're basically on in the last legs of that fight or in a new phase of that fight. And it's always to remember that there have been successes there. So for personal health, I think it's very important. Also, Justin, maybe a hand, and then there I was going through the question as well, but I think we basically covered really well if you haven't seen anything else. So we'll just give Justin maybe the final word, and then we close on time, because I think we covered it quite well. Justin.
Yeah, I just wanted to follow up on the last point you made, which I think is critical. I've been doing this work since 2014. And like you said, what we have achieved would have been unthinkable in 2014. But when we talk about LNG, I mean, the LNG industry, these terminals can take 5 or 10 years to build in tens of billions of dollars. When they were making the decision to build some of these, commercial battery storage was unaffordable. You couldn't make a case for it. The price for commercial utility scale batteries last year fell 45%, and it already had dropped a huge amount. When I was looking at decarbonizing heavy trucking just 5 years ago and doing research on that, we're talking about hydrogen and we're talking about LNG as being, because batteries would never be affordable, that we'd never have the energy density. And there was an article this morning about how China will they're going to be exporting their trucks to Europe, heavy trucks. So we're decarbonizing heavy trucking with batteries. And the cost of solar plus storage is cheaper in India. It's so much cheaper than gas. So there is so much good news. And what we need to do is start to get our policymakers to acknowledge that and stop acting like it's 2015.
That's a, you know, perfect, perfect closing argument, I would say. Thank you so much. That's exactly what we need to do. I think we played a part tonight, gave you all of the information that's needed. Please do share it.
Please do share this information with your family, with your friends. We'll be putting it online, and maybe you heard the recording. There's a podcast, so do share the information we need. Many people know what's happening so that they can get their own picture. We'll send the links. Do come to HAM, the Hammer Camp, or join the Action Days. What Anka said, just a couple of seconds, to get up and go against fossil energies and fight for the climate change, it's all the same. You know, Anka said that you don't have to glue yourself on the runway, you know, and you don't necessarily have to join a demonstration. There are many actions that you can join. I mean, you know, that makes sense to you personally. That's more you. And this is just a nice thing when we look at the picture, what's happening in the climate movement. You're not just to share a video. This is an act of activism. You know, it's kind of a donation of the movement. It's important. And there are many ways of joining in. Having said this, thank you so much. See you again at our next Europe Calling webinar. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time and we'll be again discussing fascism. So we have to keep discussing it. For many reasons, you'll soon receive the invitation. So have a nice evening and thank you so much, everybody. Thank you.